This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from my home studio here this afternoon as we continue to abide by the safe social distancing protocols here on HRN. My producer, Lee Delapina, well, he's about 13 miles away in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And our guest on today's show will join us from his home base of the Sunshine State down in Florida by Tampa Bay Downs. You, of course, are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of this show on our website, horseracingradio.net. Do want to remind everybody to continue to stay safe and to stay healthy over the course of the next several weeks as we battle through this health epidemic or pandemic here in the United States and around the world. I hope that these shows can be somewhat of an outlet for you and maybe an escape, if you will, as we bring you inside the world of thoroughbred racing. And that is definitely the case with today's guest. Today's guest has been winning races since his very first starter in 1978. And over the course of his training career, he has saddled 256 winners. This past week, the 66-year-old Massachusetts native decided that 42 years of training horses was enough, and he announced his retirement from training, saying that I plan to visit some friends I haven't seen in a long time, and I'm going to enjoy my life. No better way to look at it than that. Please join me in welcoming trainer Billy Sinkowitz to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Billy, welcome, my friend.
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
Everything is well. And, boy, you know, you think back to when you saddled that first winner at Narragansett Park in Rhode Island. There's a name from the past. Did you ever think that the journey would span more than four decades, Billy?
Well, I didn't know what else I would have been doing, but I certainly remember that night as clear as day. I remember it like it was yesterday, and there's been a lot of great times in between as well.
Why was this the right time to close the curtain on this training career?
I just think I got to the point where I was tired of giving owners bad news. In this business, sometimes you have to give more bad news than good news. And then with all the insurances you have to get now with workman's comp, and it was just a number of things. And I just thought the time was right to get out. And it had nothing to do with the coronavirus, you know, but it's just worked out this way.
In the press release that Tampa Bay Downs sent out earlier this week when you announced your retirement, one of the quotes that you had, and I loved it, it was very simple. You said, horses grab hold of you. And that happened for you at a very, very young age, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. When I got around horses when I was in the eighth grade. I started hanging around with a kid, and he used to go to a stable up in North Andover, Massachusetts. And I started going up there with him, and I can remember the first horse I ever sat on and the way it felt underneath me. And I don't know what I would have done, you know, had the horses not have grabbed me. You know, I grew up kind of a poor kid, you know, and I really didn't have much going for me. And the horses just opened up so many worlds for me. And it seemed like I met people at the right times, and I just kept getting better jobs and meeting the right people at opportune times. And my life worked out perfectly.
I have had so many trainers come on this program and people even outside of the training ranks that have come on my other shows. And they have said that repeatedly over the years, Billy, that, you know, there's something about a horse that just draws you to them. What is it about horses that has that amazing power?
I don't know. it's, I think either you have it for, you know, it's some, I don't think everybody has it with animals or with horses. And I think my grandfather grew up in Poland, and he was around horses a lot, and he really loved them a lot. And somehow I think it's in my genes somehow, because he used to come visit me when I worked on farms and stuff. And he loved being, he was like in Disneyland when he'd come to see me at the farms and walk around and look at the horses, because he lived, you know, in Boston, basically in Savin Hill part of Dorchester, part of Boston. And he wasn't around animals very much. But my God, when he used to come to visit me at places I used to work, and his eyes would just be wide open and have a big smile on his face being back around him. And it isn't for everybody, this life, but it certainly was for me. You know, I had so much energy and so much ambition, and I was so excited to be in the business when I got into it.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure here for all of our listeners, we have two Massachusetts guys talking on the program here today, because you grew up north of Boston. I grew up a few hours inland, if you will, in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in Western Mass. And you mentioned, you know, the Dorchester connection there. And when people, Billy, think about Massachusetts and what that state and really all of New England meant to horse racing, that was so many people in the sport today got their start on either the fair circuits or at Suffolk Downs or Narragansett, as you did. You know, that was a thriving industry in that part of the country years and years ago.
Absolutely. And that, there have been so many good horsemen that have come from the New England area, you know, that I wouldn't even want to start naming them, because I wouldn't want to leave anybody out. But, oh, my goodness, there are so many great horsemen that are still in the business today that came from Massachusetts, you know.
Yeah, and the fair circuits. I called some races at Northampton with my former partner, Pete Coolis, who was the track announcer there. He was nice enough to bring me up there and let me call a few races. But I know that you raced at Great Barrington, which was a stone's throw from Pittsfield, where I grew up. There was Brockton and Weymouth, right, were some of the other ones? What were some of the other fair circuits?
Weymouth was before my time, but I raced at Marshfield, Brockton,
yep.
Northampton, Great Barrington, and the Berkshire meet had just folded, but they would run the Berkshire at Barrington meet over Great Barrington Fair. But I loved going to the fairs, and I worked on the gate for probably 20 years at the fairs. And when I worked back in those days, you couldn't have dual licenses, so I would always have my horses in someone else's name when I worked on the starting gate. And even when I worked on the starting gate at Suffolk Downs for a long time, I had to have my horses in other people's names, because you couldn't work on the gate and hold a trainer's license at the same time. And then when it got to the point that you could have both licenses, they'd let you do that, you know. When I worked on the gate at Suffolk, if I had a horse in the race, I'd either handle my own horse or I'd just go over and saddle my horse. And then I wouldn't go over there at all and just come back for the next race.
Wow. What was your very first job on the racetrack, Billy?
Training for myself. I was always on the farm. And when I got my trainer's license, I hadn't even worked on a backside.
No kidding.
And they wanted me, you know, they gave me a hard time about that at the time. But because of the fact that I had done so much work for some of the prominent trainers there on the farm, taking care of their horses on the farm, you know, they vouched to me, and, you know, they said, listen, this kid knows what he's doing, you know, give him a license. I went to take my barn test with Floyd Duncan, who was a trainer in New England, and he said, just tell him I gave it to you, you know, and you passed, you know, because I sent horses to Floyd all the time off my farm, and he knew I knew what I was doing. And so, but they, you know, they tried to tell me that without racetrack experience, you couldn't get a license, but I got mine at Suffolk Downs. I took out my license at Suffolk because I didn't want to take it out at Narragansett, because I figured if I got my license at Narragansett, everybody would say, oh, they were just giving them away then, you know. But so I got my license at Suffolk, and then I ran my first horse at Gansett.
Well, what were some of the things that you learned on the farm that helped you when you made that transition to the racetrack and to training?
You know, on the farm, you have a lot more things available to you. You're more open-minded about training. I think you have a lot more options available to you than you do at the racetrack. And you can do different things with a horse. You know, you can turn them out, you know, in between training, or you can turn them out before they train. And you can train them in alternate sites. Like, I used to gallop my horses on the beach, or I used to gallop them on this deep sand thing. We used to call it the snakes, through the scrub brush up above the beach. And so I think a lot of my success weren't the things that I did the same as people on the racetrack, but things I did differently. And then when I got to the racetrack, my God, I found it was so easy to train at the racetrack without having to ship in to run. And, you know, and then I think I got, I think I lost a lot of my open-mindedness when I went to the track, but you try to, you know, keep your mind open to all things, you know, and try to keep a horse happy and, you know, do what they want and what they would like to see done to them, you know.
Are you the only member of your family that's involved in racing?
Yes.
You are. Nobody else ever had an interest?
No, not even in horses. No, I'm the only one.
Wow, that's incredible. Talking with Billy Sinkowitz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When you did move over to the track, I know you mentioned a couple of names, Billy, but who were some of the people that were integral in getting you started and getting your career off the ground?
Oh, well, Ned Allard was a big help to me. And, you know, he gave me horses when I first opened my farm when I was 21 years old down in South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. He was one of my first clients, and I can remember the first horses I had for him. And he was really good to me. And there was a racetrack practitioner. His name is Jeff Fernandes. Mm-hmm. And I met him when I was working in a stable in Millis, Massachusetts, a show stable. He used to bring his wife there for lessons from the guy I worked for, a guy named Brian Flynn, who is very prominent in hunters and jumpers. And I met Jeff Fernandes, and I went to work for him and his farm. He was married to B.A. Dario's daughter, who owned Lincoln Downs at the time. Mm-hmm. And Dario had built a farm in Cumberland, Rhode Island that rivaled any Kentucky farm. It was a beautiful farm built out of the lumber from the old Pasco racetrack, which they tore down. And it was a beautiful farm on Mendon Road in Cumberland, Rhode Island. I worked there for Dr. Fernandes, and he probably taught me the most important lessons I've learned about horses that have stayed with me to this day. You know, he's been a real mentor to me.
Yeah, people like that, you know, they're invaluable in terms of their knowledge. That it's not even what they do. They're so good at what they do, but so many of them are such good teachers too, aren't they, Billy?
Absolutely. And he was a, you know, he just taught me it was basic stuff, but it was important stuff, you know. And one of the things that I still hear him telling me, run your horses where they can win. And that pounds in my head all the time to this day, you know, run your horses where they can win. And that, you know, that was probably one of the most important things he taught me.
You know, you mentioned the name Ned Allard too, and he's a staple among, you know, trainers that were based in New England. And here's a guy I can remember before I moved to Kentucky. It was back in, God, I want to say it was 1995. He had a horse that was a sprinter that was owned by the brother of my aunt, Mark Solomone. And the name of the horse was Splendid Sprinter, a little play on Ted Williams with Splendid Sprinter.
I know the horse well.
Yeah, yeah, and my first ever winner's circle.
Ned sent him to my farm, and he had some issues at the time, and Mr. Salamone didn't want him anymore, and he was bound for the Saratoga Horses of Racing Age sale, and I took him there, and I sold him for Ned at the sale, and Mr. Salamone wound up bidding him in, because he had raised the reserve on him. And then I sold him privately to Stevie Claseris, and that was Stevie Claseris' first graded stakes winner, Splendid Sprinter. Yeah.
He could run. That was my first winner circle picture when I went to Suffolk with my family. I saw him run, I want to say it was the Faneuil Hall Stakes back in April of 95. And, yeah, I mean, such a good horse. And there were so many good horses that came through Ned Allard's barn over the years. I mean, Mom's Command is certainly the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, he was a wonderful horse. Yeah, Splendid Sprinter. I was in the winner's circle with Mom's Command when she won the Philly Triple Crown at Belmont.
Wow. Wow. What made Ned, or what does make him such a good horseman?
Oh, he's just so dedicated to it. And, he just lives, breathes, and eats horses, you know, and he always has. And he's the most honest guy in the world that you could ever have work for you. And he's just a great horseman. He always does the best things for the horses, you know. I used to do all Billy Perry's farm work, and he was the same way too. You know, Billy Perry was a great horseman. I had all his horses on the farm. And when I used to have all the Generazio's horses on my farm as well. Wow. In New England, in the winter, it was like murderer's row in my barn. You know, all the best horses in New England would be in my barn. You know, Conquered, Bound, Let Burn, it was like unbelievable the horses I had in my barn during the winter.
Now, I've had a lot of trainers tell me, Billy, that being around those horses, whether you're an assistant trainer or you're working on the farm, being around that caliber of horse, it really does help you when you start to go out on your own and start doing things with your own stable, because you now know what it's like to be around that type of horse. Is that true?
I don't think so. You know, I used to take care of every horse like they were a stake horse. It didn't matter if they were $3,500 claim or the best horse in somebody's barn. They all got the same care. You know, that's the way I've always looked at things. I always like to bet them real good, and I like to feed them real good. And that's what I've always done.
Well, you got started on the right foot. You obviously learned something along the way, because your very first starter was your very first winner, and it was really special. 1978, Narragansett Park, a horse by the name of Golden Arrow. Tell me that story.
Oh, my God. We had legged them up the previous 2 years, and Mr. Filios, he bred him and owned him his whole life, and they sent him to us like 2 years previous to me getting him, sometime in 1975 or 76, and we legged him up to go back to run at Narragansett for 2 years, and he couldn't win a race, and we couldn't understand how this horse could not win a race, because he trained so good on the farm and on the beach. My ex-wife used to come back with tears in her eyes from galloping him. He was so strong and doing so good. So I asked Mr. Filios, if I take out my trainer's license, will you let me train him? And he said, yeah, sure. He had nothing to lose. He hadn't won a race in 2 years, you know. And so we took him to the race. We took him to the races, and he won the first time we ran him, and he paid his age backwards, $71. I took him up to Suffolk Downs to work him one day prior to running him. And Ned's foreman was Dennis Lima, and Dennis is a steward at Tampa Bay Downs now. And he wanted to watch the horse Breeze. So, of course, Arrow was really heavy-headed, and I didn't even know enough to send the horse with a pony to Breeze him. So as soon as he hit the gap, he ran off with the girl. Janet Ferrandi was supposed to ride him in his first race, and he ran off with Janet Ferrandi. So then she was supposed to work a half a mile or something, but by the time he hit the pole, he was exhausted already. And Dennis looked at me and he says, Billy, this horse is going to win first time out. I said, you're crazy. He says, no, I'm telling you, he's going to win. I says, this horse is so happy, he's going to win. I says, you're crazy. And sure enough, he won the first time out. I was so nervous that night. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah,
Golden Arrow was the smartest horse I've ever been around in my entire life. He was just an incredible, incredible horse. And everybody that has ever been anywhere near him will tell you the same things.
Let's not gloss over the fact that you said he paid his age backwards. He paid $71 to win that 5-furlong claiming race at Narragansett. He was 17 years old when you won with him for the first time. That is such a cool story, and it actually kind of took you into instant stardom in terms of appearing in Sports Illustrated too, didn't it?
After that season, somehow they got word of him, because he had won 5 out of 7 and was second and third in 7 starts. He won his last race, actually, at Great Barrington, because Narragansett finally closed up shop for good. And he couldn't run anyplace else because of his age. He could run in Rhode Island or he could run at the fairs, but you couldn't run at Suffolk Downs because they had an 12-year-old age limit there. And so I took him to the Great Barrington Fair, and he went on my birthday at Barrington. And so they, Sports Illustrated, sent a reporter, Demi Stathopoulos, to our farm, and she stayed for a week and did a story on him. And then they even sent her a famous photographer from New York, Lane Stewart, and he came and took about 200 pictures of him, which they used too. And he was in Sports Illustrated magazine. It was quite a thrill.
Yeah, that win on your 25th birthday at Great Barrington, his final win, was his 58th career victory. It came in his 176th career race. That's, Billy, that's unheard of nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. You know, imagine the uproar of a 17-year-old running now, you know. But I'll tell you what, he was just doing great. You know, he had an old set of ankles on him. He had an old tendon, which was set. But he loved to train, and he did really well. And I have pictures of him when he was 25 on the farm, and he still looked like $1 million. We kept him until he was 26, and then we put him down. at the farm, and he's buried up on the hill at my ex-farm.
Wow. That had to be a difficult day.
Oh, it really was. It was terrible. Yeah. I tell you what, he was just something else. He was just so smart. He taught me how to train. Believe me, he trained me more than I trained him.
Really? How so?
He just knew the game, and he knew what to do, you know. And I'll tell you, he knew when he won, and he knew when he didn't win. And when he didn't win, he wasn't pleasant to be around. He knew when he got beat, and he wasn't happy about it. I'm telling you, he was an incredible horse. He was like a human being.
You know, I've often heard that. Horses know, right, when they do things well, and they know when maybe they're not doing things as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But
that's really true.
He loved being with us. You know, everybody said, oh, he doesn't do good in the farm. Every time they turn this horse out in the farm, he doesn't do any good. Well, he did great with us, you know. He was the big horse in the barn till the day he died.
Wow. Where did it go after Golden Arrow? You get off to that fast start. He wins with your very first starter, your very first win. Where did the career take you from there, Billy?
I think the second horse I had my care was a horse I got for free from a kid that became a jockey, Tony Barrera, and he was given a horse while he was breaking horses in South Carolina, or a horse named Big Surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him, you know, he was a little horse, and he was in terrible shape when we got him, but Tony didn't know what to do with him, so we brought him to us, and we ran him, and we won with him in his second start for $3,500, and they claimed him. And then I think the third horse I trained was for Mr. Almy, who used to be a steward up at Suffolk Downs, and I had the last homebred from Quonset Farm, and her name, she was a massbred, and her name was Quonsetta, and I think that was the third horse I trained, and we wound up winning with her as well. And then for many years, we just would get a few horses and run them off the farm, and then it wasn't until like 2004 I went and got stalls at Suffolk Downs, and I trained right at the racetrack, you know.
What was the most horses that you ever had in your barn?
I had 35 at Suffolk probably for 3 or 4 years. Three or four years, I'd say. I was up to 35 head.
Was that about the right number for you?
Pardon?
Was that about the right number for you, Billy?
Oh, no. Well, any number's the right number, you know. I find that 10, having 10 horses was like optimum for me. I liked having 10 horses. You know, it seems, I think you reach a point of diminishing returns when you have too many. You know, it costs you a lot of money, and sometimes you don't make all that money back. I love training at Suffolk. I made money at Suffolk all the time. Every year I raced at Suffolk, I made money. It was great there. I love racing at Suffolk Downs.
Yeah, and you're the kind of guy, by the way, visiting with Billy Sinkowitz here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. You're the kind of guy, Billy, that likes to be able to put your hands on those horses every morning and know exactly what they're telling you, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've always had great help. You know, I've had some wonderful people working for me. My foreman at Suffolk Downs was a guy named Joaquin Villanueva, and he was a heck of a horseman, and he did me so much good, and I really relied on him a lot. And he was a great guy and a great person and a great horseman, you know. And I was sorry to leave him behind when I left Boston, but he had another job in the afternoons at the airport. So he had property and, you know, in Boston, so he couldn't leave and come with me. But he was a wonderful person. I miss him. I still talk to him every now and then.
What led to that decision to leave Boston, Billy?
So, Suffolk Downs closing in 2014.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sad day too. I had many memorable moments being a Massachusetts guy going to Suffolk Downs, and I remember it fondly. And, you know, some of the, when they ran like the Mass Cap, they would get some unbelievable horses there for the Mass Cap.
Oh, yeah. It was a great event. You know, the place would, it was great to see the place come alive, you know, on that day.
So did you go right from Massachusetts to Florida?
Yeah, I think I went to, I went to Maryland in 2010 for the winter. And then a few years after that, I started going to Tampa in the winter, and I've really enjoyed it at Tampa, and they've treated me great there, you know. And I wish they paid a little bit more purses, but it's a beautiful little racetrack, and you know, they do a great job at the racetrack, and it's, I love Florida now, you know, I'm going to live in Florida for the rest of my life. And, you know, and then I would race up at Monmouth or Delaware in the summer months.
So what's the plan from here, Billy, now that you're retired, at least from training? You're not getting out of the game necessarily, but what things do you think you might do moving forward?
I don't know. I might work on the gate a little bit. If they can get racing going after this plague goes by, I might go work on the gate and drive the starting gate around up at Colonial. I want to go visit with people, with Josie. We plan on doing some traveling and just take it easy. There's a lot of things we've wanted to do that we haven't had time to do because of the horses, and we're just looking forward to doing those things.
Now, what's it like working on the starting gate? Is somebody like myself who's never done it, give people an idea of what that's like.
It's a ball.
Really?
I'll tell you, if you have one nervous bone in your body, it's not the place you want to be. You have to be chill over there because the horses pick up on your nervousness and it makes them nervous. But I love the camaraderie with the guys that work over there. And we used to, especially at Suffolk, we just used to have so much fun over there. And at the fairs, we had a lot of fun too. You know, going to the fairs and working on the gate at the fairs was like being on vacation and making money, you know?
Yeah, I've always said that has to be one of the most dangerous jobs on the racetrack, right?
Yeah, but you can't think of it that way. If you think of it that way, you're going to get in trouble. You know, yeah. I was like really fortunate over the years. I had very few horses do Dixies with me in there. And a lot of the reason is, I think, is just because I was relaxed, you know. You just have to be relaxed, and they sense it.
Well, talking with retired trainer, now retired trainer, Billy Sinkowitz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Coming up on our bottom of the hour commercial break, we're going to talk more with Billy on the second half of the program, and we're going to talk about a horse that still resonates with him by the name of Western Tees. We'll talk about some of his other top horses, and we'll tell you the story of a very special horse named in honor of his granddaughter that's run for Cecilia. All of that still ahead right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2020. The Woodbine Backstretch is equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track and a 7 furlong turf training track. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 18th, the Queen's Plate June 27th, Woodbine Mile Weekend September 19th and 20th, and the Patterson Canadian International, now a $1 million purse, on Sunday, October 19th. Visit woodbine.com/incentives for the full stake schedule and more information.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from my home studio. My producer, Lee Delapina, is in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and visiting with trainer Billy Sinkowitz, who announced his retirement from training this past week after spending 42 years training racehorses. His first winner coming at Narragansett Park in 1978, and I'll continue this visit momentarily right after I remind you that if you did miss any portion of this show or any of our trainer talk shows, well, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can see the podcast of this one and every single trainer talk show that we have done and brought your way over the course of the past 8+ years. They're all archived for you there, so go back and take a listen. I'm sure many of you are spending time at home. You're looking for something to do. Here's a very positive, fun thing that you can enjoy if you're a horse racing fan. So head back there now, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And a reminder to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, as I told you, Billy Sinkowitz is now hanging it up, at least on the training side of things. You heard him say at the end of the first half of the program that he may go work on the starting gate for a bit, maybe at Colonial Downs, just to kind of stay involved. And there have been so many unbelievable moments in his career, including his first win with a 17-year-old gelding by the name of Golden Arrow. He told you that story in the first half of the show. And Billy, there are other horses that have captured you over the years, and one of those is a horse by the name of Western Tees, who actually gave you a victory up at Saratoga. How cool is that?
Yeah, it was really something. I think it was probably my, other than Arrow winning at the first time for me at Narragansett, it was probably my second most thrilling moment. You know, probably the biggest race I ever won, you know, because it's always great winning at Saratoga. And that was a horse that I ran for 4,500 at Suffolk Downs. I broke his maiden for 4,500 because I got the horse for free because he had a few issues, and I gave him some time on the farm, and I brought him in at the end of the meet, and I just trained him a little bit, and I got him half fit, but I knew he was good enough to win for 4,500. So David Amos got off him after breezing one day. He says, you know, this horse is fit enough to run right now. So we stuck him in, and he went easy for 4,500. And then I ran him back for 6,250. I would have run him back. I figured I'd just run him out at the end of the meet and, you know, just make as much money with him, run him cheap and make as much money as I can. So I think I ran him for the next time for 6,250 or 7,500 because I had known him with a horse I would have had to run against him, and I knew he would have beat him, so I didn't want to do that. So I gave him a kick up and he went easy. And then I just kept kicking him up, and he kept winning and winning and winning. And he went into Saratoga undefeated, and he beat Casia Electronica and Jack on the Rocks that day. And Jack on the Rocks in his next start win the Maryland Million Sprint. And Casia Electronica went on to have an unbelievable career with Todd Fletcher until he was killed in a training accident at the training track at Belmont. You know, if you look up Casia Electronica, he was just an unbelievable horse, and we beat him both that day.
Yeah, we were there to broadcast his win in the Charlestown Classic, I remember, when he won that race. He did have an amazing racing career, and it was sad to, you know, see his career end the way it did. But, yeah, Western Tees, I always, when I was growing up in Western Mass, Billy, I would go to Saratoga. That's kind of where I cut my teeth on racing. It was my home track. But as I was learning the game, we would always see horses that would come from Suffolk Downs or from Finger Lakes, and people would always disregard them because they were coming from a lesser circuit. And I was always told, and tell me if this is true, that those horses, the expense that's incurred by a small operation getting those horses from Suffolk, from Finger Lakes to Saratoga, people aren't going to spend that kind of money if they don't think that horse actually has a chance to compete. Is that true?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I picked up the form after I entered him, I wanted to throw up because I saw what he was in against.
Yeah.
But the horse was training so good. He couldn't have been training any better than he was. He was just going so good. And he was in, and I just decided I'm going to take him, and I'm going to go have a good day at the races, and whatever happens, happens. And so I went up there. He was in a late race. He might even been in the last race. I'm not even sure. But I went up there, and I was gambling, and I was having a couple of drinks. And I was just having a great day gambling and enjoying myself. And then the race came, and I saddled him, and he won. And it was just one of those unbelievable days that you have not too many times in your lifetime. And, you know, it was just incredible. You know, and a lot of my friends happened to be there that day, and it was just great, you know. And he was a joy to be around that horse, too. You know, he was just a really nice horse. I had him in the first stall, and I used to, you know, I love visiting with him, you know, right in the first stall. He loved to be rubbed, and he'd rub his face, and then he'd turn around, and you could scratch his butt, you know, and he just liked it, you know. He loved people. He was a good horse.
Do you remember what he paid that day?
I think he was 7-2.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, a lot of respect for him. Yeah, a lot of respect for him in a feud like that.
Because he went in there undefeated, you know. I ran him in Michael Gorham's name that day because I didn't want to take out a license. And so I ran him. Anthony Spadia owned a piece of him, so I ran him under Anthony Spadia's owner's license at Saratoga, and he ran under Michael Gorham's name, who's a very close friend of mine, because I didn't want to, you know, pay for all the insurance and stuff. And so he ran under Michael Gorham's name. But I'll tell you, when I was walking out of the paddock with him, everybody was yelling at me, "Keep him undefeated, Billy. Keep him undefeated." Everybody knew it was my horse, you know. And it felt great, you know, when he left the paddock going out onto the racetrack. People were hollering for him. It was something.
I love the fact that you've talked very openly about, you know, going and hanging out, having a good time with your friends, betting horses. I mean, let's face it, at the core of this game, that's what it's all about. That's how so many of us got hooked on the sport. And I've had trainers come on this show and say, no, I don't bet on my horses, whether it's a superstitious thing or they just don't do it for whatever reason. But you were never shy about placing a few bets on your horses.
No, I don't. I didn't bet a lot on my own horses. No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
A few, okay. I would, but no, I'm not. I wasn't big on betting on my own horses. No, I can't. I could never afford to gamble that much because I just couldn't afford it. I didn't have enough money to gamble. Like, you know, I had to feed a family. You know, I'm not a big gambler. Never was. When I gamble, I just do it recreationally. And that day I was at Saratoga, I was betting on everybody else's horses, but I didn't bet on him.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. You mentioned your family.
I didn't bet on Golden Arrow the first time either.
$71 to win. That's got to hurt.
I'll tell you, the worst part of that was I had to call up Filios and tell him the horse won because I told him we were going to give him a race because I thought the horse would probably need a race. And I told the rider that, you know, we give him a race, and then she wound up winning the race with him, and I had to call up Filios, and Filios loved to gamble. He used to push it through with two hands. So that was a phone. The first phone call I had to make telling him the horse won was a tough one to make.
Great story. Billy Sinkowitz with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Billy, did you ever have any superstitions when you were saddling horses?
Oh yeah, like everybody does. You know, you hate for people to say "I'll see you in the winner's circle," and I hate to take a picture of a horse before the race. You know, I hate it when people take pictures of a horse before the race. And everybody has these same superstitions. I like to wear a blue shirt on the day I run.
Really?
But
why blue?
Other than that, I guess because that's the color of blue ribbon from my show horse days. First place.
Yeah, first place. That's right. How you stayed in show horses for a short time before you moved over to thoroughbreds, right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I took care of show horses. I used to travel up and down the East Coast with hunters and jumpers.
And you mentioned your family a couple of times, and I asked you in the first half of the show if anybody else in your family was involved in racing, and you said no, you're the only horse guy in the family. How about your kids? They never had any interest in following in Dad's footsteps?
No, I think they saw their mother and their father work so hard. I think they didn't want any part of it. When they were young, they would help out in the barn. They liked to be paid if they did help. You know, and I didn't mind paying them. And they would go out there and muck out stalls and stuff in the barn. They, you know, they grew up in the barn, you know, when they were small, because we were always at home. So, you know, when they were young, obviously there was a long time they weren't in school, and they grew up in a barn. But they all had jobs on their own, and they went to college, and the three of them are all doing well. You know, two of them teaching my daughter as a physician's assistant. You know, so they're wonderful children. I'm so proud of them.
Yeah, special. Billy, at the end of the first half of the program, I mentioned before we went to the commercial break that there was a very special horse that you trained by the name of Run for Cecilia. And she was a daughter of Awesome Again, named after the granddaughter, not your granddaughter, but the granddaughter of the owner, Steve Sinatra, who suffers from a neurological condition which makes walking difficult for her. It affects roughly one in every 400,000 people. Tell me the story of Run for Cecilia.
Yeah, she came. Cecilia came to the races that day with Steve and his wife and his her parents as well. And they had a tough time getting the horse to the races. And I was training her, and she was training okay. Nothing really lights out. And Tammy Piamarini rode her that day, and she was in a wheelchair. And they, you know, with a lot of help, we got her down to the fence, and Tammy rode the horse over to her to show her the horse and everything. And I can't remember if I was working the gate that day or not. If I handled her in the gate that day or not, I can't remember. I don't think so. But she wound up winning that day. I think she wound up breaking her maiden. And her father carried her into the winner's circle, and we got a great picture, and it was a great day, and everybody was excited, you know. It was like a miracle, you know, because I think people told Steve that the horse would never win a race or something. I don't know, but I never. And she was in against the boys as well, I think, that day, you know, because her race wouldn't go. So I stuck her in against the boys, and she wound up winning.
Yeah, it's understandable.
It was a great day.
Yeah, understandable that people would think that she wouldn't win a race, because she really wasn't in contention in many of her races before that win. It kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, the racing was a lot easier at Suffolk, and that's what she needed. You know, she needed easier company, and she sure got that at Suffolk Downs, you know.
And that was the only time that Cecilia was actually in attendance to see her run?
I believe so. I think it was, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. What a special story. And, you know, I loved, as I was reading the article, which is on your website, it was mentioned in there that the horse... It was eventually discovered early on that the horse suffered from a neurological condition, not exactly like Cecilia, certainly, but a horse's version of a neurological condition. And, you know, that was affecting the ability to bear weight on the hind legs of that horse. And so it had to be turned out and worked on. And to overcome all of that, much like the horse's namesake, Cecilia, is pretty special.
Right, absolutely. But yeah, she trained, you know, she was training well for the race, and she wound up winning. It was, you know, very gratifying.
Yeah, very special indeed. Billy Sinkwitz with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Billy, who are some of the other horses or the other moments that will stand out to you when you finally do get time to stop and think back on the past 40-plus years of training horses?
I had a horse named Professor Palmer, and he was a great horse. He liked to run in front. And I'll tell you what, if he got the lead, you weren't getting by him. And probably for 10 or 12 races, I don't think he got beat more than a head. You know, if he got beat, he'd get beat a nose. Or he was just a fabulous horse. And he had issues. But he was just a really good horse, you know, and I enjoyed having him. And I had him for quite a while. And then probably one of my better horses was a horse named Zephyro that we just retired. He came up with a bit of a suspensory, but he won his last three before we retired him. And he beat some nice horses at Monmouth, and he beat some nice horses here at Tampa Bay Downs. And, you know, other than that, you know, I had a great meet at Monmouth at the last, you know, I wound up racing at Monmouth at the last meet last year, and I had a great meet. And I was probably training like six horses through the whole meet. And they wound up making $250,000. And it was like, I'll hang my hat on that because, you know, racing at Monmouth isn't easy, you know. And I lost six horses there to boot. You know, they took six horses off me. And, I claimed some and ran some that I had. And we wound up having a great meet. I think I wound up winning eight or nine races at Monmouth. And it was just a nice meet. And they treat you so well at Monmouth Park, I'll tell you what. You know, it was tough to... Just not to go back to Monmouth, you know, was a tough decision to make to retire now, because I was looking forward at one time to going back there, but I decided to hang it up.
How about some of the people, Billy, that when you think back on the past 40-plus years are going to stand out to you?
Oh, there's so many. There's just so many. Like, between my employees that work so hard for me over the years, and between at the farm and at the racetrack, you know, I used to have quite a few employees at the farm, and I had some great crews work for me over the years. And not only did we work hard, but we had a lot of fun on the farm doing it while we were doing it. And at the racetrack, I've had, you know, great people, you know, that have worked for me over the years, and I've had some great owners. I've had the cream of the crop and owners, you know, the whole time. You know, one thing Dr. Fernandes always taught me is, you know, make sure, you know, work for people who you know you're going to get paid. And all my people paid real good, and they were always happy to have me doing the work for them. And I used to work for a guy named Keith Brodkin. He passed away, and what a wonderful man he was. If something went bad and you had to call him on the phone, when you called him, he had you feeling better than, you know, you were trying to make him feel, you know. And there's just so many people, and I think that's what I'm going to miss the most about hanging it up is the people, you know. The people in the horse business are just unbelievable, you know. That, you know, you compete against every, you know, you're competing against each other, and you a lot of times you're in close quarters with them and everything, but everybody just gets along so well. And the racetrack, it's like a melting pot, you know. It's like the United Nations at the racetrack. If you can't get along at the racetrack with other people, you're not going to get along anywhere, because there's so many different kinds of people. And it's just a great, great place.
What would you tell somebody that comes to you, maybe a young person that's thinking about getting involved in training horses, and they say, hey, Billy, what's the one piece of advice you can give me if I want to get into training?
That's a tough one. Get paid. Probably get paid. Make sure you're going to get paid.
That might be the most difficult aspect of the whole thing sometimes.
You know, sometimes it can be, yeah. Sometimes it can be.
How about one thing you're most proud of, Billy, when you think about everything you accomplished?
I just think, I always consider myself a real good caretaker. And I just think I gave all horses the best shot to do their best, you know, whether I was taking care of them on the farm for somebody else or for me, you know. I think I improved most every horse I put my hands on, if they were on the farm or in my barn training, you know. You know, sometimes things don't always go the way you want them to go, and, you know, stuff happens. But on the whole, I just think I gave horses a shot to do good, and I tried to make them be happy and, you know, perform, you know, because they were happy and sound, you know.
Yeah, Billy Sinkowitz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. One thing I always enjoy asking trainers on this show, Billy, I do it quite often, is to take me inside your house and tell me what memorabilia you have, either on the walls or maybe a trophy cabinet or whatever it might be. If I walk into Billy Sinkowitz's house, what are some of the things I'm going to see that are horse racing related?
Probably just about everything that's on the walls. And a lot of it is from the fairs. You won't see a lot of trophies, because I didn't train those kind of horses, you know, the won trophies, you know. But you'll see a lot of pictures and a lot of memories. And the pictures are not only of horses, but of people, you know, people that I've known through the years, you know, and some that are still around and some people who passed. And but I have a lot of mementos on the walls for sure. But the more important than the mementos and the pictures of my memories and my brain, and they'll always be there, you know.
Did you have the chance to meet many celebrities and famous people along the journey?
I have, yeah, some, yeah. When I was a kid, I used to take care of all the Kennedy's kids' horses, and I knew Mrs. Onassis. And I took care of the famous Winchester, and I took care of Maria Shriver's pony, and I knew Caroline and John Kennedy. I had a job down the Cape, and I took care of their horses. And, I've met a fair share of people, you know, that were, you know, famous and stuff.
Yeah, what was that like being around the Kennedys?
It was interesting. They were all good kids. You know, the Secret Service used to bring them to the kids still had Secret Service protection at that time, and they used to come a lot of times. A Secret Service agent would bring them to the barn. And Mrs. Onassis, she was always very pleasant, you know, to me. And I'm like, so, Yeah, I always felt like if I could win the Kentucky Derby, I was dying to say that it was a thrill to win a Kentucky Derby, but it wasn't as big a thrill as winning my first race at Narragansett with Golden Arrow. I was dying to say that.
You might feel differently if you won the Kentucky Derby.
I don't know. I think I'd say it. I'd love to say that on national television. I think I would have, because it's true. Golden Arrow gave me the thrill of a lifetime.
Yeah, and really got your career started on the right foot and in the right direction. It was that was a special moment. We talked about it in the first half of the program, and we'll take this opportunity to remind people that if they missed that story or any of the stories you told in the first half or any portion of the show, they can check out the podcast at horseracingradio.net. Boy, 40-plus years of training horses, Billy, and to finally walk away and to do it on your terms, that has to be special too.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, winning a race is winning a race. It doesn't matter whether you do it at the Great Barrington Fair or whether you do it at Monmouth Park. It always gives you a thrill. And that's the greatest thing about the business, you know, is winning a race, you know. It's always an accomplishment. It's not easy to win. It's always hard to win. There's only one way to win. There's a million ways to lose. And so, you know, I won, you know, my share of races. And like I say, a lot of these horses that I won with didn't even run in my name, you know, so I don't think the record books are indicative of the career I had. Mm-hmm. But I know I don't care. I know what I did.
I'm so glad to hear you say that the thrill of winning a race, doesn't matter what race it is just, it's something you have to experience. And I've had the privilege of being involved with pieces of horses that my wife and I have owned, and there is no greater feeling than when your horse crosses the finish line first. And if this sport could find a way to bottle that feeling and sell it, this would be the most popular game in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you better love the game. If you get into this game, you better not get into it just to make money. You better love the game, because it's a hard way to make money. I don't care if you're an owner or a trainer or what you're doing. You know, it's a tough game. And it's a hard way to make money, but if you love it, it's worth it.
Do you ever see a time, Billy, where you might turn your attention to something other than horse racing, or will you always be around it?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, there are other things that interest me. You know, I love working with my tools, partly from having the farm, you know, because I used to do so much. You know, I built barns and everything when I had my farm, and I love working with my tools, building stuff, and I don't know. I'm open to anything, you know, really.
Well,
you know, I could do a lot of things besides, you know, to you know, even you know, having the farm, there was a lot more to do than just take care of the horses, you know.
Yeah, so, it's never ending on the farm, right?
Yeah. I enjoyed my tractors and I enjoyed building stuff. I, you know, even fixing stuff. I used to enjoy putting in fence. You know, I put in miles of fence on the farm, and I enjoyed doing that. You know, building the farm was my dream, and you know, that was something I'm glad I did. You know, I built the farm from nothing. You know, I cleared all the land, put in all the fence, built barns, and I've had a good life.
How many acres was that farm?
It was 15, and I had to use every inch of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in doing it that way, at least you were able to do it the way you wanted it. You could set it up the way you wanted it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, it was in a beautiful location. It was on the edge of the Freetown State Forest, so we were up there by ourselves, and we were surrounded on three sides by the Freetown State Forest, and, you know, it was a good place to raise the kids and a great place to be.
Yeah, Billy Sinkwitz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Billy, coming down to the final 3 or 4 minutes of the program, and you told me off air, you said, you know, if I start telling stories, we could go on for hours, and 1 hour show wouldn't be enough. And you can tell when you get into telling stories, that's the truth. What's maybe your favorite story to tell outside of some of the ones that you've already told here on the program?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I knew I'd put you on the spot with it.
That have happened over the years. You know, I've done everything. I've shipped horses all over the country. I've seen the whole country through the windshield of the truck with horses in the trailer behind me. You know, and I've just done so many things. And You know, so it's I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard to say to pick one out. You know, probably in the course of a conversation, if we were sitting around having a beer or something, I could, you know, tell you some stories. But I just can't think of any right now off the top of my head, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll ask you this final question, and I always like to end the show by asking trainers to tell us a little something about them that maybe people might not know. And you talked about outside of racing, you enjoy working with tools and working out on the farm and building things. Anything else? Like, for example, you are a horse trainer. That's what you do, but that's not necessarily who Billy Sinkowitz is. So who is Billy Sinkowitz?
I don't know. I'm a good friend to everybody that knows me, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I was, you know, I was honest with everybody my whole life, you know, and that's all. I'm proud of my career. You know, whatever I did, I'm proud of it. And that's about it. That covers it.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be in the position I'm in now that I can retire. And I'm looking forward to Josie and I living out the rest of our lives and enjoying ourselves.
Yeah, well, enjoy every minute of it, Billy. You've certainly earned it. And I know that there are a lot of horses that will be very thankful that they ended up in your barn, and a lot of people that will be very thankful that their horses ended up in your care as well. So sad to see you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate the visit here and hearing some of the stories and looking back on your career over the course of the past hour. And, Billy, enjoy retirement. Stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy it when you get a chance to travel, too.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I'd just like to say goodbye to everybody that's listening, and thanks for listening.
All right, wonderful stuff from Billy Sinkowitz, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And, yeah, what a career. You know, each week when I start to prepare early in the week for Trainer Talk and I start to look at potential guests, I'll look at some of the trainers that won some of the big races over the course of the weekend, and I'll also flip through some of the press releases that are sent out by racetracks, and I'm so thankful that they do it. And that story of Billy Sinkowitz, albeit a brief story sent out by Tampa Bay Downs, really resonated. And yeah, somebody who has done this for a very long time and somebody who will continue to be around the sport in some capacity, you can bet on that. His passion, his love of the horse, unparalleled, as you just heard here in this past hour. Well, if you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcasts of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Well, for my special guest, Billy Sinkowitz, for my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Pendle. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.